Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. This Ain't Normal. It's the title of a powerful new documentary from filmmaker Rudy Hippolyte about the young men and their families who struggle every day with gang violence in Boston. Now, this is a city that works pretty well for a lot of people. It has a booming economy, world-class colleges, universities. But in a handful of neighborhoods, like parts of Dorchester, Roxbury, and Mattapan, too many guns, violence, and the threat of violence is a daily reality. So here's a scene from This Ain't Normal, in which Donnell Singleton, a program coordinator for Street Safe Boston, talks with a young man about what he should expect from life.
It's not normal for a young man to be shot. Yeah. Like, that's not normal. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? It's not normal for someone to be driving in their car and someone to shoot up the car.
Yeah.
That's not normal. It's not normal for me and my family to be somewhere and then the crib gets shot up. That ain't normal.
That's a scene from the documentary This Ain't Normal. Earlier today, we talked to Daquan Bop Peters, an aspiring rapper and one of the young men profiled in the film, and with the director of This Ain't Normal, Rudy Hippolyte, who grew up in Roxbury and who's now a producer and digital video editor at Harvard University. I began by asking Rudy to describe the scope and nature of gang violence in Boston.
There are about 100, over 130 gangs in the city of Boston. You know, on streets, they're right next to each other. And for the young people and those who live in those neighborhoods, they see that every day. But again, as I said, for most of Boston, it could be two streets over and they're beautiful restaurants, and you have no idea that there are folks and young people struggling in those particular neighborhoods.
Yeah, and one of the points you make is just how localized these gangs are. As you said, I mean, sometimes it's just a question of one block. I mean, there'll be one gang on one block, the next block, another gang, the next block, another gang. And if their paths should ever cross, really bad things can happen.
That's right. And, you know, they're right on top of each other. They have to be really careful in terms of where they go, how they walk, public transportation, who's there, because their rival could be, you know, on the street, next street over. So they're constantly under siege and have to constantly look over their shoulder and really plan each and every step.
So, Daquan, let me turn to you. You still live in Roxbury, and in the film we see that you live with your mother and your younger brothers. But talk a little bit about how the sort of gang situation works in Boston and how it has affected your life.
The gangs in Boston is just crazy. Gotta be cautious. You gotta look over your shoulders every day. Police everywhere.
What pulls people into these gangs? How do you describe
being a follower?
Yeah.
People think it's cool until you go to jail, and that's when you really see. People just see stuff on TV. It all started from Chicago. Everybody trying to be like Chief Keef and everybody, so that's just, you know, the stuff that you see, you just pick up on.
Right, right. And you say people think it's cool until they end up in jail or get pulled into the violence. You were a victim of the violence. We see that you were shot and seriously injured. It could have been fatal. What happened to you?
I just was in my neighborhood and somebody came through. I got shot.
Someone came through, you mean a rival gang member?
A rival gang member.
Yeah.
I can't say exactly who it is, but yeah. It was just a rival gang member. I had been shot, hit my stomach, a hollow tip 4.45. It was close range, ripped through my stomach, hit my spine. So I had to get a third of my colon taken out of my stomach, surgery on my spine. The doctors didn't even think I was going to be able to walk. I was in Boston Medical for like 3 weeks. Went to Tewksbury Rehab for like 4 months.
How are you doing today?
I'm fine, perfectly fine. I'm walking, running.
I'm really glad to
strong.
Hear that.
Yep.
Can I ask how that kind of injury, that kind of attack, that kind of involvement in the violence, how it changed your life?
It just showed me it's not a game, but it could have cost my life or me not be able to walk again. So I just took that little thing and just stored it in my head like,
It's
stuff, I got to make a change. I got to move different.
Yeah. Rudy, you really go into depth in telling the stories of many of the young men. One of the points that you make in the film is that so many of these young men, like Daquan, are growing up in a world without fathers, without male role models, because so many of these guys have been shot, have been imprisoned. They're just not around. What does that do to the community?
It's tough, you know, and again, it's all related to mass incarceration. You know, a lot of these young men, they grow up without a father. In some instances, whether it's somebody who's incarcerated, somebody who may be on drug addicted, same thing with a mom. In Daquan's case, his mom kind of led a similar life to what Daquan led. She had her struggle. She was homeless. She had to survive. Mm-hmm. But she's trying to do something very different with Daquan and her other boys. And I see her as, you know, a hero doing what she's doing without anyone having taught her the skills to be a parent. You know, how do you nurture a family? Because her mom died when she was fairly young, and her dad wasn't really in her life like that. So she pretty much was on her own. So I think it's just incredible, these kids and how they have to grow up and not have anyone to kind of mentor them and to guide them.
Yeah, Daquan, can you talk a little bit about that? Because in the film, you're an example of exactly what Rudy's talking about. You're also in this role of, in a way, of being the parent, the dad, to your younger siblings.
Yeah, it's a tough job, but I have to. I have no choice but to do it. Yeah, I have three little brothers. Two stay with their grandmother now, just, you know, school's mm-hmm. better, and it's out of Boston, it's out of the way, be able to mm-hmm. run around and stuff. Yeah, got that going on. I got my little sister staying with me now, so that's another thing. I just got to be there for my mom. She was there for me, so, and she still is, so I just got to be strong. Plus, I'm older now, so it's really nothing to me.
The film talks about the so-called Boston Miracle, and I want to come back to you, Rudy, mm-hmm. about this. And just for listeners who may not know exactly what we're talking about, this is the response to the violence of the early 1990s when the murder rate in Boston hit an all-time high. Local clergy got involved in a big way. Law enforcement got involved in a big way and successfully reduced the murder rate. And this was sort of became known as the Boston Miracle. But in your film, one of the street workers, Conan Harris, talks about what followed the Boston Miracle. Most importantly, a lack of essential services for the community. So let's listen to a bit of what he says. This is Conan Harris.
The reality that we see today is some of the results that come from that. What I mean by that is this. Because they didn't service the community, because it was an after effect of servicing and being deliberate and focused on the services as it was on the arrest. This one area that had one gang now has 12. The city who probably once had 50 gangs or 40 gangs or 30 now has 128.
Wow, so the city that once had 40 or 50 gangs now has 128. So, Rudy, what happened after the Boston Miracle? What did the city need to do that it didn't do?
So what happened with all these men, you know, essentially the so-called war on drugs, all these men being corralled and incarcerated, the city never followed through with the families to make sure that they have the resources, whether educational opportunities, to make sure that these families were taken care of. So a lot of these young men turn to each other, try to survive in the best way they can.
Mm. You know, there were a lot of great moments in this film. I was struck by one. You profiled the Hit Quarters recording studio in Mattapan. We hear from Calvin, who's a producer in this studio, who talks about how sometimes rival gang members would come into his studio to record music and put aside their rivalries and even start making music together. And here's a little bit of what he says. Listen to this.
It's amazing when they get the energy. These are intelligent people that know how to move when they're treated with that respect and they have a direction and they see the value in who they are.
Simple but profound message, right?
One of the things you take away is the intelligence, and that could be put into so much of a positive thing for our community, which really needs it.
But is the message there that with more services, with more opportunities, with more education, I mean, you basically have lots of willing takers for those kinds of services if the services were there?
Most definitely. I see it as a human resource that we're not taking advantage of.
Yeah.
And we're just, you know, putting these young people who are brilliant in some cases in jail and not trying to do the right thing in terms of providing them with, you know, some type of hope and resources to put them on a different path.
Now, Rudy, you grew up in Roxbury, correct?
Correct.
So what was your experience growing up in Roxbury?
So we came from Trinidad, and I came here when I was 14 to the Academy Homes in Roxbury. So that's where one of the, you know, gangs were. I grew up with these young men who, in some instances, went into gangs, would have been incarcerated. But I saw them in a very, very different light. They were my friends. We played, you know, basketball. They taught me how to play baseball. We played tennis. We hung out together. Mm-hmm. So my experience, even though we came from very humble beginnings, was really a rich one in terms of neighborhood, community, and really having an affinity for where you live and for other people.
I want to play a cut from the end of the film. In here, you're going to hear Rusty Pendleton. He's a DJ and an outreach coordinator for Street Safe Boston. And then Kenny Waller, another street worker. And they essentially raise the question about how Boston uses its resources and how they could use their resources to help neighborhoods like these. Here's what he says.
It's already been proven if we want to make something happen or stop something from happening, it can happen. Boston Marathon proved that.
You know, we had 5,000 cops when that happened down, when that marathon bombing happened. And it's still, and, you know, you can't get that those type of resources to come up here and stop this violence.
As the focus was on that marathon, the hood was still shooting. But you never heard that.
That's a powerful moment from the film, Rudy. Can you talk a little bit more explicitly about the point that's being made there?
Yeah, the point that's being made, it's not that the resources when the Boston Marathon bombing happened should not have been geared towards finding the perpetrator and resolving it. I think the issue was, why doesn't that happen in our community, in the poor community, in the black community? There's violence happening in these neighborhoods, you know, every day. And during that marathon bombing, it was happening. But again, I don't think there's a resolve to really do something about it. So the point was why can't we have the same resources put towards the Boston Marathon bombing into these neighborhoods to resolve this problem?
And why do you think that's not happening? I mean, is this a case of just sort of most folks who live in political Boston and Boston where the money is just don't really think about these smaller enclaves of Boston where this violence is concentrated?
Out of sight, out of mind.
Right.
You know, so they see things in the news and they may see, you know, gang violence being happening. And I think when you see the film and you see, like, you know, their father, like I'm a father, there's a mother and they're trying to do right by their families like anyone else. Hopefully people become empathetic. Unfortunately, there's racism in this country. If it doesn't affect you, you really don't care about it, but we need to care about it.
To that point, the film ends with a kind of call to action from Robert Lewis Jr. He founded the Street Safe Boston program, and
Correct.
He says this kind of violence in Boston, even though it's concentrated in a small part of the city, should matter to everyone. Here's what he said.
Smith & Wesson, the company, is not in Roxbury, Dorchester, Mattapan. What we also have to make sure we're doing is how do we figure out to deal with the issues of getting guns off the street. So, folks, that's all of our problems. Because until, and I will say this, and not to offend anyone, until if this hits white America, white suburban America, policies will change. Why wait for that to happen? Solve it now.
Solve it now. That's a powerful message.
Yeah, it's kind of prophetic when you think about today and you think about those incredible kids in Parkland and what they're trying to do to bring an end, you know, to the gun violence and to look at reasonable gun control measures. We were hoping that this moment didn't need to happen in order for us to really do something about this. But we're here and we're in support of what those young people are doing. And what Robert says there is so prophetic.
Mm. Daquan, I want to end just by talking to you about where you are now. At the end of the film, we learned that back in 2015, after filming, you were arrested, charged with assault and battery, unlawful possession of a firearm, possession of Class B drugs. How have things been going for you since then?
Well, right now, this is going great. For the drug thing, I just had to take probation, 2-year probation, year suspended. So it's another thing over my head. Really got to be good now. I'm just focused on my music. I just released a new video on YouTube, MGSB Bop, Low Key.
We will link to that on our website so
okay.
people can check it out.
Yeah, okay. I have a show coming up Saturday in Worcester, the show nightclub, have Fever D there. She's a model out here from Boston. I'm just trying to stay focused.
All right. Well, stay focused, and I wish you all the luck in the world.
All right. Thank you.
And thank you for coming in. That's Daquan Bop Peters. He's an aspiring rapper, and he's one of the young men profiled in the film This Ain't Normal. Also with us was Rudy Hippolyte. He's an independent filmmaker and producer and digital video editor at Harvard University. He produced and directed This Ain't Normal, which will be screening at the Cambridge Public Library this coming Monday. Rudy, thanks so much for coming in, and thank you for this really important film.
Thank you, Anthony. Thank you for having us.
And you can find more information about the film and tickets to the upcoming screening on our website, radioboston.org. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston. This ain't normal. No way. This ain't normal. I see it 8 days. Still they say it. This ain't normal.